Turn with me, if you will, to chapter 12 of the book of Bereshit, or Genesis, in the beginning. This one is called, because this is the first unique words that appear, says, "Now said Yahuwah al Abram." Now, Abram, we just talked about last week, he is a fellow who was born of Terah. And they went forth from Ur of the Chaldees into the land of Canaan. They dwelt at a place called Haran. And then after 205 years, Terah, the father, died in Haran. And at this point, we see that Abram is age 75, as it turns out. You can do the math and look at what we've just read in the last Torah portion. And he is told from Yahuwah, "Get thee out." The words there are Lech Lecha. So that's why the portion is called Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha, out of your country, away from your kin, from your father's house, and go unto the land that I will show you. And this is probably one of the most famous commandments in the book. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I'll make your name great, and be unto you a blessing. And here we go. This one too. Famous words. "And I will bless them that bless you, and him that curses you will I curse." And some people will note that there's a slight difference in the way there than translated correctly than you'll usually hear it. I will bless them that bless you, and him that curses you will I curse. And in you, it says, all of the families of the earth shall be blessed. And by the way, note that in this place, that word there that's usually ha'aretz for the earth, or the land, or the families of this planet is how it's sometimes thought of. It doesn't say that. It says in you all... Oops. Okay. It says in you shall all the families of Ha-Adama. And remember what that word means? That's the thing that Adam was taken from, and it literally is the ground. So in you all of the families that are taken from the ground will be blessed. So, Abram went, he listened, as Yahuwah had spoken to him, and along with him went Lot. And Abram, it tells us, and here we are, I mentioned this already, was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Now, notice this. This has always been one of those things that strikes me as not just interesting, but inspiring. I guess that's the right word. Here is a 75-year-old fella who essentially is told, directly from the Creator, go to a place you've never seen, go away from everything you've ever known, and I will bless you. And he does. Abram, it says, took Sarai, his wife, Lot, his brother's son, so his nephew, and all their substance that they had gathered, all the souls that they'd gotten in Haran, and they went forth into the land of Canaan. Into the land of Canaan they came. And so that's basically south from where they were, and the south and a little bit to the west. Abram passed through the land into the place of Shechem, unto the Terebinth of Moreh. And there was Canaanites at that point, it says, in the land. Yahuwah appeared unto Abram, and he said, "Unto your seed will I give this land." And he built there an altar unto Yahuwah, who appeared unto him. And he removed from there, in other words, he journeyed from there unto the mountain on the east of Beth-El, and he pitched his tent, having Beth-El on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar unto Yahuwah, and he called. Now, this is always interesting, because later on we're going to see that by my name Yahuwah, Moshe is told, I did not make myself known to them at that point. But it's not like they had never heard the name. In other words, they were at least somewhat familiar with it. Abram obviously knew it, because there he built an altar unto Yahuwah, and he called upon Beshem. He called on the name of Yahuwah. So Abram journeyed on. He still headed towards the south. And at this point, it says there was a famine in the land. Abram went deep down into Egypt to sojourn there, because this famine was sore in the land. So it was pretty gnarly. And it came to pass that when he was near to enter Egypt, he says to Sarai, his wife, "Look, I can tell. As a matter of fact, it's clear to me," he says, although obviously he's probably thought about it, but maybe it really occurs to him now just how good-looking she is, because he says to her, "You are a fair woman to look upon." So it's going to happen that it'll come to pass when the Egyptians look at you, and they'll see you, and they'll say, "Oh, that's his wife," and they'll kill me, but you they will keep alive. "So I pray you, since you are my sister, say that." Because it's half true, right? He's her half-sister. "That it may be well with me for your sake, and that my soul may live because of you." So it came to pass that when Abram was in Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, and yep, she really was pretty good looking. And the princes of Pharaoh saw her, and they told her, they told Pharaoh about her. They said, yes, she is something to behold. And that woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Now, she is, at this point, you know, she would be what you'd call a late middle aged, if nothing else. But he dealt well with Abram for her sake. He had sheep and oxen, he asses, men servants, maid servants, she asses, and camels. And Yahuwah, it tells us, plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues. Now, it doesn't say specifically what they were, but obviously these are things that they caught Pharaoh's attention because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And this is one of those places where there's interesting commentary in the Midrash, and I think we have to take a little bit of exception to what it says, because, well, it's going to tell us. Pharaoh called Abram, and he said to him, "What have you done to me? You didn't tell me, and why didn't you tell me, that she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister?" So, in fact, here is the key. It says, "So I took her." It sounds like that is the word that is used to know her in the sense that Adam knew Chava intimately. I took her to be my wife. And this would explain the plagues. He has committed adultery. He claims it's unknowing, and he's asking Abram, "Why'd you do that to me? Now, therefore, look, behold your wife, take her, and go on your way." So Pharaoh at least got the message, and it seems to have hit him pretty hard. Pharaoh gave men charge concerning Abram, and they brought him on the way, and his wife, and all that he had. So they basically kind of escorted him. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, all that he had. Along with him was Lot, into the south. Now, I usually mention this because you notice that it says that when they first came on down, Lot came with him. And the word there is ito, with him. And it says the same thing in English this time, but now it says, rather than ito, the word is emo, with him, into the south. Well, what's the difference? And essentially, the way Rashi explains this is, if you understand this common, the way the word is used in the Hebrew, essentially, the first time it implies that Lot was in a subordinate role. He came with him the way that a subordinate would come with his master, or a junior officer would come with the senior officer. But in this case, chapter 13, Lot is with him, and it implies that they are no longer subordinates. There's not this number one, number two relationship anymore. And that's an important point, it seems, for what follows. Abram was very rich. He had a lot of cattle, silver, and gold. And he went on his journeys from the south unto Bethel, the place that we saw that he'd been before, the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, unto the place of the altar, which he'd made there the first time, where Abram called there on the name of Yahuwah. And Lot also went with Abram. He had flocks and herds and tents. And the problem is that there were so many flocks and herds and tents at this point, but particularly the flocks, that the land wasn't able to bear them so that they could dwell together. They just simply had too much land, too much animals and livestock for the carrying capacity of the land. Substance was great. They couldn't dwell together. So there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And by the way, it says the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt there in the land at that point too. So Abram says to Lot, "Hey, let's not have any strife, I pray you, between me and you, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we're brothers. So look, isn't the whole land here before us? Here's what we need to do. You separate yourself, I pray you, from me. If you go one way, you take the left hand, I'll go to the right. If you take the right hand, I'll go to the left." He is giving Lot the choice. Lot lifted up his eyes. He beheld all the plain of the Jordan River. It was well watered everywhere. And this was, it notes, before, as a matter of fact, not a whole long time before, but before Yahuwah destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And like the garden of Yahuwah, like the land of Egypt, it was as you go into Zoar. So Lot decided that's what he wanted. He chose all the plain of the Jordan. And Lot journeyed to the east. They separated themselves one from another. Then Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain. He moved his tent as far away as Sodom. And then we hear this. Now, this is going to be one of the keys to what's going to happen in next week's portion. "Now, the men of Sodom," it says, "were exceedingly wicked. Sinners against Yahuwah exceedingly." Yahuwah said unto Abram, after Lot had been separated for him. Now, wait a second. Let's note this. Remember this part about the Ito and the Emo and how at one point Lot was subordinate, but at this point seems like Lot believes he's in an equal position with Abram. They both were wealthy and so forth. And what we notice is it's been a while. Turns out it was all the way back in chapter 12, verse 7, when Yahuwah appeared to Abram and said, "Unto your seed I'll give this land." And that's the last place in the text that we see Yah speaking directly to Abram. And so the sages point this out and say, you know, this is an interesting comment. It was not until Lot has separated from him that again Yahuwah speaks to Abram. And that part is made, you know, right there in the text. It comes out and says it. Doesn't say that's why, but it does put this in there. And you'd have to ask, why would it say that if it wasn't key? So after Lot was separated from him, he says, "Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward, eastward and westward, for all the land which you see, to you will I give it, and to your seed forever. And I'll make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, that would be also how your seed would be numbered. So arise, walk through the land, the length of it, the breadth of it, for unto you will I give it." So Abram moved his tent. He came and he dwelt by the terebinths of Mamre in Hebron. And there he built an altar unto Yahuwah. And at this point, we're going to get a pause. Chapter 14 is, I've got the heading and the notation in my teaching Bible here. This is essentially a very famous battle. And it's also the first war that's described in Scripture. And arguably the first war ever. Chapter 14, at least the first war of post-Adamic era. But in any case, the description goes like this. "Came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar," which would be Babylon also, "Arioch, king of Elasar, Shero-Laomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim, that they made war with other kings. One of them's name was Bera, king of Sodom." Now, isn't that interesting? King of Sodom's name is Bera. Bay is in, right? In Ra. What's Ra? In evil. In evil. So the king's name is In Evil. And you know, that would be a fitting name for just about any of the kings of the earth today. And they also, they made war with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, which kind of has to do with wickedness. Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zor, and the words there mean insignificant. So all of these came as allies to the Valley of Siddim, a.k.a. the Salt Sea. And sometimes you'll hear this referred to as the War of Evil versus Evil. Let's see, I got the question on the screen. It was when Lot pitched his tent in Sodom. Well, Lot went with him into out of the land. That's when the word was Emo that was used at that point. So the second use was Emo, when he came with Abram up into the land again out of Egypt. Okay, so basically we've got evil versus evil, and this place which is also called the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Shedar Laomer. In the 13th year they'd had enough, they rebelled. The 14th year Shedor Laomer and the kings that were with him smote Rephaim. Now notice that these are all words that describe these big dudes, the giant people, and those that essentially had what looks like a tainted bloodline. They smote the Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnaim, and the Zuzim in Ham, and the Emim in Shaveh Kiriat Taim. So all of those are words that we're told elsewhere in Scripture have to do with essentially giants, or the descendants of the descendants of those who were these half-breed creatures. The Horites and their Mount Seir unto El Paran, which is by the wilderness, they turned back, they came into En Mishpat, the same as called Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, also the Amorites that dwelt in Hazazon Tamar. And then out went the kings of Sodom, and the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that guy Zor, and they set the battle, the place called Zor, they set the battle in array against them in the Vale of Siddim, against Cherdo Laomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goim, Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar. Four kings against the five kings. Now, the Vale of Siddim, it says, was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell there. They died there, and they that remained fled to the mountain. They took all of the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all of their victuals, and they went on their way. So they got looted, basically. Oh, and they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, his nephew, who dwelt in Sodom, along with his goods, and they departed. Now, at this point, one of the folks who had escaped from the situation came, and he told Abram, the Hebrew, who now dwelt by those terebinths of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, the brother of Aner. These were confederate with Abram. And when Abram heard that his brother had been taken captive, he took his trained men, born in his house, total of 318 of them, and he pursued. He went as far away as the place that is later, it seems, known as Dan. He divided himself against them by night, he and his servants, smote them, pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. He brought back all of the goods of all the people, along with his brother Lot and the women, and essentially he took them all back. The king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedor Laomer, and the kings were with him at the Vale of Shaveh, the king's vale. And a fella who is going to turn out to be pretty significant, this is a term that we're going to see elsewhere, Melchizedek, you'll hear it pronounced, but I like Melchizedek. I think that's probably the most easy way to understand the Hebrew. Melech, king. Zedek has to do with one who studies Torah, righteousness. So the king of righteousness, or the righteous king, Melchizedek, king of Salem, shalom, Salem, peace, he brought forth bread and wine. And he was a priest, Cohen, of Elohim Most High. And he blessed him. He blessed him. And he said, blessed be Abram of Elohim Most High, maker of heaven and earth, and blessed be Elohim the Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And he gave him a tenth of all. So generally, we get the he's and the hims. Who's referring to who? The lesser blesses, the greater blesses the anyway. The point is, he gave him a tenth of all. This is usually understood to mean that, this is Abram who is giving things to Melchizedek. King of Sodom said to Abram, hey, give me the persons, take all the stuff for yourself. And Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up my hand unto Yahuwah, Elohim Most High, maker of heaven and earth. I'm not going to take so much as a thread, nor a shoe latch, or anything that is yours, lest you should be able to say, I have made Abram rich. Only thing I'm going to take is that which the young men have eaten. In other words, basically, the wages, the fact that they have needed food for the journey, can take that. And the portion of the men which went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their portion. So these folks have helped out. They deserve a bit of the spoils. But as far as what he's going to take for himself, Abram says, no, nothing. After these things, the word of Yahuwah came to Abram in a vision this time, and it said, fear not, Abram, I am Magen Abraham. Here we've heard that, we pray that every week. The shield of Abraham, I'm your shield, and your reward shall be exceedingly great. Abram said, O Yahuwah Elohi, what will you give me, saying that I don't have a child, I don't have an heir? And the he that will possess my house is his number one servant, Eliezer of Damascus. And he said, Abram continues here, he says, behold, to me you've given no seed, I don't have an heir. And lo, one born in my house is to be my heir. Okay, he's essentially lamenting the situation, because the promise, remember, is that he is gonna his seed will inherit. Behold, the word of Yahuwah came to him and said, this man is not your heir. He will not be your heir, but one that shall come forth out of your own loins, out of your bowels, that will be your heir. So it is, in fact, your seed in the way that you know it to be. That is where your heir is going to come from. So he brought him, and this would be Abram, out, and he said, look, look towards the heaven, count the stars. If you're able to count them, he said to him, that is the... That's how your seed will be. In other words, that is how numerous your seed will be. And here we go. This is a very famous commentary. Of course, it's talked about in the apostolic writings as well. And he, Abram, believed Yahuwah. And that was counted to him by Yahuwah for tzedakah, for righteousness, for literally him being a righteous person. And notice what it says here. He believed first. He believed first, and then we're going to see what the next couple of verses say. Then Yahuwah says to him, I, Ani Yahuwah, that brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it? And he said, O Yahuwah Eloheka, how can I know? What will the sign be that I shall inherit it? And essentially, this almost, people have had a concern about the wording here. I think what he's really saying is, you know, why me? What have I done to deserve this? Can you give me some more indication of what's really happening? How shall I know? Well, he said to him, take me, get yourself a heifer, 3 years old, a she-goat, 3 years old, a ram, 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and also a young pigeon. So Abram got all of these three things. He divided them in the midst. He laid one half over against the other, but he didn't divide the birds. Now, meanwhile, the birds of prey come down, and they were trying to prey upon the carcasses. It says, Abram drove them away. But it came to pass, when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And lo, a dread, a great darkness fell upon him. And he, Yahuwah, says to Abram, this is again, while he is in this deep sleep, surely you will know. You will have it of a surety. Rest assured. Yeah, a lot of ways to put it, but know this. Know it well. That your seed will be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them. And they'll be afflicted for 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve, I will judge. Afterwards, though, they're going to come out with great substance. But you shall go unto your fathers in peace, in shalom, and you'll be buried at a good old age. And already some would say, well, he's already in old age, but he has got a long ways to go, is the message here. In the fourth generation, they shall come back here for the iniquity, the Torahlessness, the unrighteousness of the Amorite is not yet complete. It's not yet full. And every time I read that verse, year after year, and I ask myself the question, is the iniquity of the Americans, is that full yet? How much more is it going to take, right? We know what happened with the Amorites, and you got to ask, well, will his justice sleep forever? He has hidden his face, but when I read these comments and the time frames, I can't help but think about the parallels here too. Came to pass, though, that when the sun went down, there was a thick darkness, and there, behold, a smoking furnace and a flaming torch that passed between the pieces. Now, if you have some understanding of the way that a covenant is cut, and that is the word that's used here, it's a karat, literally to cut a covenant. The pieces were cut, and the general idea is that the covenantors would pass between the pieces that were cut. And in this case, Abram is asleep. So he does not pass between the pieces. In that day, though, it says, the smoking furnace, a flaming torch, passed between the pieces. And I believe this is significant because what we're going to see is Abram was a party to the covenant. He was a benefactor of the covenant, but he really wasn't on the line for it in that sense. And I see a comment on the screen. I'm not exactly sure what context that means. How about Africa instead of America? Could it be them? And I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. Who instead of who or in what context. Anyway, so there's a covenant that's cut, and he said this. Yah said, unto your seed here I have given this land, from the river of Egypt, the Nile in other words, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadmonite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, and the Raphaim, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Girgashite, and the Jebusite, all of those. 16, we're going to return in chapter 16 to Sarai, Abram's wife, and what happens when he essentially says, okay, I got this promise, how's that going to work out? What do I need to do? And I think that at least you have to ask, is that unreasonable? Here is Abram wanting to do the best that he can. He has walked as commanded all this time. Now he has this promise, and he's kind of short on the details. Obviously, his wife, Sarai, is fairly old, and all of this time, there's never been an issue. She's never born a child, for example. So, okay, now what? Well, it says, Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. So she has been barren. She had a handmaid, though, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, look, behold, Yahuwah has restrained me from bearing. It's not going to happen for me, she thinks. So you go in, I pray you. In other words, unite sexually with my handmaid. It might be that I'll be built up through her. And Abram, it says, hearken. He shamad. He heard and obeyed the voice of Sarai. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian her handmaid, and she gave him her. After Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and again, Sarai gave her, Hagar, to Abram, her husband, to be his wife. So she is the one that essentially initiated and brought this about. So Abram goes into Hagar, right? He lay with her. She conceived. And when she saw that she conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. It's kind of like, hey, you've been trying all these years. Ha ha. I was able to do it. Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon me. I gave my handmaid into your bosom, and when she saw that she conceived, I was now despised in her eyes. So that's kind of a nasty way to treat me. So the Yahuwah judge between me and you. Now, Abram at this point said to Sarai, behold, okay, she's your handmaid. So you do that which is good in your eyes to her. And maybe this was a mistake, because it says Sarai dealt harshly with Hagar, and she fled from before her face. So the word here in the Hebrew is, it looks like she oppressed and even afflicted Hagar. And at this point, we see the Melech, the messenger, the angel of Yahuwah, found Hagar by a fountain of water out in the wilderness, by the fountain on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, hey, Sarai's handmaid, what's up? Where have you come from? And where are you headed? And she says, I flee from the face of my mistress, Sarai. Then the Melech, the messenger of Yahuwah, said to her, Shuv, you need to return unto your mistress and submit yourself under her hands. Which probably isn't exactly what Hagar wants to hear, but nevertheless, you are in fact to humble yourself before her. Do that. And the Melech, Yahuwah, said unto her, I will greatly multiply your seed. It shall not be numbered for multitudes. So she, in fact, gets a promise here too. And the Melech of Yahuwah said to her, behold, you are with child. You will bear a son. You shall call his name. And this is another one of these interesting prophetic names. Yishmael. Yishmael. Yishma. Shema, right here, and obey. El. And the word here literally is rendered as Yishmael. Yahuwah. El has shamard, heard the affliction. He shall be a wild ass of a man. His hand will be against every man, every man's hand against him, and he'll dwell in the face of all his brothers. So he sounds like he's going to be kind of a difficult pill. She called the name of Yahuwah that spoke to her and said, you are El Roi, an Elohim, a God of seeing. For she said, have I even here seen him that sees me? So that well was called Be'er Lahoi Roy, the well of the living one seeing me. Behold, it's between Kadesh and Bered. And as promised, Hagar bore Abram a son. Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. In this sense, Ish will hear. Abram at this point was 86 years old. He was 86 when Hagar bore him the son named Ishmael. So it's been 13 years from there to what we're going to see in chapter 17, next chapter. So he was 86. This chapter begins and says, when Abram was 99 years old, so that's 13 years later. Now at this point, okay, the son is probably he's just coming of age. Yahuwah appeared to Abram and he said, Ani El Shaddai. El Shaddai, the all-sufficient one. Walk before me and be thou tamim. That's an interesting word. Whole, perfect, complete. First place we see it was Noah, right? He was tamim. He was perfect in his generations. Some of the English Bibles render it as wholehearted. But I like to think of it as there's an English legal term that goes, it's called a warranty for fitness of purpose. In other words, you buy a product and you think it's supposed to do what I bought it to do. And in this case, I would say the way we understand this is you are fit, you are wholehearted, I have made you, you have everything you need, be complete before me. In other words, do that for which I have made you and given you everything you need to be complete and do. Behold, I will make my covenant, Briti, between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly. So Abram fell on his face, Elohim talked with him, and he said, as for me, behold, my Brit, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. So this is essentially a repetition of the promise that he already knows. Oh, and here comes the really, really new part. And this is where now we can remember the name that we've most often heard this guy called. Nor anymore shall your name be called Abram. But now, from here on out, he's putting a hey in there. And the way I usually try to think about this, and you'll see this in a lot of the writings and the people of Yah, often they will be given or will take one or two of the syllables from the name Hashem, Yod-Heh, Vav-Heh. The Heh is what we're talking about here, the Ha, and put that in there. So Abram becomes Abraham. Your name will be called Abraham, for the father of a multitude of nations have I made you. And I'll make you exceedingly fruitful, and I'll make nations out of you, and kings will come out of you. And I'll establish Briti, my covenant between me and you and your seed after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant. Literally a Brit Olam, forever, to be an Elohim unto you and your seed after you. And I will give unto you and your seed after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their Elohim. And El then said to Abram, or now Abraham, and as for you, you shall keep Briti, my covenant, you and your seed after you, throughout their generations. This, he says, is the covenant, my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you, and every male thereafter, all of you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You'll be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin. It'll be a token, a sign, a mark of the covenant between me and you. And he that is 8 days old, so on the eighth day, the young male will be circumcised among you. Every male throughout your generations, whether he's born in your house or bought with money from a foreigner, and even if he's not of your own seed. He that is born in your house, he that is bought with money, all of them need to be circumcised, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. Again, a Brit Olam. Now, the uncircumcised male, which is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that one shall be cut off from his people, because he has literally broken Briti, my covenant. And then Elohim says to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, well, she too is going to get a new name. You shall no longer call her Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I'll bless her, and get this, moreover, I will give you a son from her. Yea, I will bless her. She will be a mother of nations. Kings and peoples shall be of her. Now, this is one of those things that every time I read this, I just love it, because we're going to see the significance of the name and the irony and the, I guess you'd say it's in a way it's bittersweet, but it's a joyful laughter too. Abram fell on his face and he laughed. Ve Yitzchak. And Ve Yitzchak. Does that sound like something we might have heard before? Yeah, you know what? The same root word there is going to be the name of the child of promise. We're going to get there. But Abram fell on his face, he laughed. He said in his heart, hey, shall a child be born unto a fellow that's 100 years old, for crying out loud? That's kind of hard to believe. And shall Sarah, notice he's using her new name, that is 90 years old now, will she bear children? And Abram said unto Elohim, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. Evidently it occurs to him, wait a minute, that son that's now 13 years old, I care about him. He's not the son of promise. Elohim said, no, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son. You shall call his name Yitzchak. There it is. The root word, same word, laughter. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his seed after him. And as for Ishmael, I've heard you. Behold, I have blessed him, and I will, in fact, make him fruitful. I'll multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes will come from him, he will beget, and I'll make of him a great nation. But my covenant, that is going to come through Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear unto you at this set time in the next year. And after that, he quit talking with him, and Elohim went up from Abraham. So Abram, now Abraham, took Ishmael, his son, all that were born in his house, every male, all those that were bought in his with his money, every male among them, and they circumcised the flesh of their foreskin on that very same day, as Elohim had said to him. And Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. Ishmael, his son, was 13 when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And on that same day was Abraham circumcised, Ishmael, his son, and every single man of his house. All those born in the house, those bought with money from foreigners, all of them were circumcised with him. And with that, folks, I guess you'd say on the covenant sign note, the Torah portion ends.